anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard,
normal,
or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I'll do that.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. I'm Jen. Time to kick some ass and chew some bubblegum. And I'm all out of bubblegum. Oh well, I'm also an anomaly.
My name is Angela, and I possess the Master Sword, and I am an anomaly.
Welcome to the podcast, people.
You went late 90s, I went early 90s.
Yeah, of course. This edition of our podcast is about 90s video games. We have a little series going on. We covered 80s video games 2 weeks ago, I guess. And now we're doing 90s, and then soon we'll be doing 2000s.
It's like a month ago that we did.
You're right, it was a
month
ago.
It is, because our last show was about the creepy creeper.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep. This is the weird thing, is that you say the 90s because it's obviously the decades, 10 years.
Yes.
All right. The 80s to me, because I was a kid during all of the 80s, I was like 4 to 14 from, you know, 80 to 90. Even though you grow up and you change a lot, it didn't seem like that much of a difference from 80 to 90 because that was just my childhood. Whereas in the 90s, you know, that was a huge transition. I started as barely a teenager, and by the year 2000, I was like an adult or something.
In the year 2000. Sorry.
Wow, Conan O'Brien. That was a good reference. It seems like all the years are so disparate. When I was thinking about the games I was playing and the things I was doing during that time, it just feels so separate from each other, whereas everything, all the games and stuff I was thinking about in the 80s seemed like it was real close together.
A lot of things happened to us in the 90s. I graduated from high school. I graduated from college. I got married, all in one decade. Whereas in the 80s, elementary school happened, junior high happened.
When it's happening, it seems the opposite, because when you're a kid, like, everything seems so long. But when you look back on it, it seems like, oh, here's this one decade where I was a kid, and here's this other decade where I had like all these life-changing experiences. Grad from high school, college, I lived in another state, you know, all this stuff happened.
Well, if you haven't figured it out, we're Gen Xers. I mean,
yeah, we're kind of at the end. We're at the tail end of Gen X.
We actually went to the same university. We were on campus at the very same time.
Well,
I actually saw Angela in a play, and I had no idea who she was.
No, not at the time. I was awesome, though. Did you see Horror House when I was there?
I sure did.
Okay, so you saw two.
And I saw The Wizard of Oz.
Wizard of Oz. Yeah. That was definitely me. But that was when
Angela played the Wicked Witch of the West.
And I was awesome. And you know how I got that part? There were other girls who looked better for the part and who were great actresses. And I got the part because of my laugh. I could cackle. I won't do that to any of you today.
Well, people love your laugh. They know you're capable.
I could do like an exact like Wicked Witch cackle. And so I honestly think that's what landed me the role. The director might have other opinions, but you know, I'll take whatever I can get. As other actresses know, you don't care. You just like that you got the part. So yeah, that was fun. I started high school in 1990. And this is so funny too, because last year, the girl who worked, our seasonal person, she just graduated from college like a couple years ago. So she's like really a lot younger than us. And she and I were driving somewhere, like a long trip together. And she like wanted to know all about what it was like in the 90s.
Oh my gosh.
And I was just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. Because like, I remember thinking, what was it like in the 60s? You know, like the 60s seemed like so far away to me. But the other thing, and this will really blow your mind. Okay, so you're in 74 and I'm 76.
Yeah.
Woodstock was only 8 years away from me, only 6 years away from you, right? Woodstock. That seems like so long ago.
Yeah.
Okay, so 6 years and 8 years. Russell was born 16 years after Nirvana.
Wow.
That, That's
yeah, quite a contrast.
It is a contrast. That is like the olden days in his brain. It really is. But yeah, I mean, I think we were lucky to be in the 90s when we were. This kind of goes into this conversation. And this happened to you too, because you graduated in 92, right? Oh, 93. Yeah, and yeah. I graduated in 94. When you got on campus, you could get email.
Not at my school, backwoods hick right
no,
here.
No.
Oh, college,
talking
I know.
Talking about college. So you graduated in 93.
Yeah.
And you go to, so you started college in 93. Uh-huh. So you go there and like, I remember the moment I was standing in the cafeteria and I had just eaten and my friend said, oh, I'm going upstairs to check email. And I was like, what is that? What is that? It blew my mind. It blew my mind. And so it was so cool to me that you could do that. And we had those little, those giant monitors.
The tube ones, the big tube boxes.
That were just like one color. The CRTs. Jim was looking at me like I was joking about not knowing. Because he was like, really? The CRTs. And that's all they had. So did you do that at school?
Oh, yeah. No, I recall being in high school when I first learned about email. And one of my best friends was a year older than me, and she graduated the year before. And so we used to like write to each other, you know, pen and ink.
Right.
And then one day I got this message that goes, oh, here's my email address. And I was like, okay. I don't know what this is, you know. So I have that memory too. And I did use email my freshman year in college. And
yeah,
I remember they had a computer lab. We actually had to go into a room with 10 million other computers in to use email because, you know, I had a home computer, but it didn't have that capability.
I probably mentioned this in our last podcast, or our 80s one, but I don't remember if I did, is that when we got that Apple II or Apple whatever, I figured out what it was and now I forget. So anyway, when we got that first one, I remember I was just so fascinated by this thing that investigated it. I looked over the whole computer and there was a port for a modem. And I was like, what? You know, and I knew.
Mesmerized.
I had some sort of concept of.
From war games? Me too.
Maybe.
Do you want to play a game?
I somehow had the concept of what that the capability was, but like no one needed it. I mean, we just didn't need it. You use the computer for a couple of really rudimentary games and to make banners in Print Shop.
Yeah. Mean,
that's what you used it for. And then, so what kind of music were you listening to in the
always speaking of printers, dot matrix printers. You remember those, like the holes on the side of the paper and they fed through the printer that way. And then you could barely read the stinking ink because it was all made of these little dots and it was gray. Oh, people, you have no idea how good you have it now.
I think I found some of that paper like randomly in a box.
What do you do with it? You just have to recycle it now. Just
well, you
throw
can,
it away. Or
you can pull the things off. There, it's letter. It's letter size.
No, that's true. It's just not as good. Well, what kind of music was I listening to? In high school, I was a country girl. Garth Brooks, Reba McEntire, Clint Black. Oh my God, I was in love with Clint Black.
He was pretty cute.
Yeah. Got into college and I met Dave and I started listening to heavy metal.
That's an interesting twist.
Such a switch, right? I mean, we were listening to Radiohead. He really liked this band called Dream Theater and... Oh, Metallica, all those bands that were, there are still 80s bands, but they're still going in the 90s.
Yeah, I kind of had, my favorite band around that time was The Cure.
Oh, yeah.
You were still, love. I had a giant poster of Robert Smith, which my mother was afraid of, but it was so cool. I loved it. Oh, I love The Cure so much. And I had this awesome tape of all of these different versions of Cure songs, and I don't remember what I did with it. Somebody made it for me. Oh my gosh, this is the most important thing. I just remembered this. The most important thing about the 90s, okay. Jen, is mixtapes.
Yes. Awesome mixtape number one. Awesome mixtape number two. I made a mixtape for my wedding.
Aww,
and they played it for our wedding.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
We would if you had a good friend and you were talking and realized that y'all had similar tastes in music, you'd make them a mixtape. It was a whole thing.
You call into a radio station, you request a song, and you wait with your tape recorder in front of the radio, and you wait until they play your song, and they always jacked it up at the end. Oh, that was so-and-so, blah, 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 and you're listening to.
I did that in the 80s more, but when I was making mixtapes in the 90s, I had CDs. I would make them. But that also is a different experience because so what year did y'all get married? 96 or something? Okay, yeah. Like, we were 21. I had barely started dating during that time. Like, because I was only 19 when you got married. Mm-hmm.
So now you're like a year older than my sister.
Yeah, I was way into being social. And that's where, you know, talk about how the 2 years make a difference. We had a completely different experience. Again, it's such a different thing in the 90s. But when we were in high school, though, my brother got a Super NES. And I started playing one of my favorite games, Zelda, Link to the Past.
I didn't play Zelda at all.
You didn't play Zelda?
Nope.
Who didn't play Zelda, Jen?
Well, I played PC games in the 90s.
Oh, so even in the early 90s? Because this is like early. This was like 91, 92.
Yeah, no, I didn't have a console system.
And also Game Boy. You didn't play Tetris?
I played Tetris on the PC. And the only time I played console games was when I was invited to a friend's house. And,
okay.
And I played GoldenEye.
GoldenEye.
007.
See, you're talking about 64, though. 64 is a lot later.
That was 97, I think?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, GoldenEye was Nintendo 64. Yeah, because that's when I played my favorite Zelda of all time, Ocarina of Time. It's amazing. Why do you keep...
You keep
being silent. Like,
I'm sorry. I don't have anything to contribute.
I'm laying awesome bombs on you, and you're just like letting them fizzle. Zelda Link to the Past. That's the first Zelda I ever played, and that's the one that I referenced in my intro. Zelda was on the NES, but I never played it because my cousin didn't have it. And we have it now on this this compilation CD that we had with the GameCube several years ago. But I didn't really like it. I don't like the first one, but Link to the Past is really cool. It's just all the dungeons, and you have to figure out how to pass everything, and then you get the Master Sword, and the Master Sword has a special move where you flip around, and then you can kill everything around you, mm-hmm. and that was really cool. And obviously, the graphics are still pretty rudimentary at that time, but it was just a really cool game. And there was also these funny things, like you'd go into the village. See, this is so interesting because all the other games we talked about last time, both of us had pretty much played most of them.
Yeah.
But it seems like we have totally different experiences for the 90s.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you'd go into the village and there was little chickens around there. They had little, you know, bawk, 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 when you'd go in there.
Do that again?
I'm not going to. It would make little noises like chickens, you know? Uh-huh. And if you hit them with your sword, all of the chickens, like in the whole game, would rush you. It didn't really affect anything, you know? It was just being in the village or whatever, but it was still fun because...
That happened to me in real life, but continue.
You got rushed by chickens?
I grew up on a farm.
Grew up on a farm. That's funny. Zelda is just a really cool franchise, and so that you can play it in the mm-hmm. intro, I'm going to find the music because there's just amazing music that comes with all of the discoveries in Zelda. It like actually makes your heart happy.
I want to put gameplay trailers and videos in our show notes too. We did that for the 80s show notes. So we'll definitely do that if you guys are interested in seeing what these things look like. Because I'm sure not everybody listening has played some of these.
I know, but I know there's some Zelda people out there that are yes, the chickens.
I've seen them dressed up at con. I knew what you were talking about because of conventions and cosplay.
Well, I thought we were going to do more like chronological, which is why I started with that. But that's okay.
Yeah.
And honestly, you know, I was doing so many other things, theater and dance and all that during high school. I didn't play as many games as I did later. I played more when I was in college. You have more things to procrastinate about in college.
I played a lot of games when I was dating David, and people would play this stupid golf game. I hated that game, but it was hilarious.
My brother had those games.
It was hilarious because of the voiceovers and the things that they would say. You know, they would say things like, "Oh, it's in the deep stuff." They would say, "Get there. It's in the hole." And I remember David just thinking that was hilarious. It was a boring game. I hate golf in real life, and I hate it in game versions. Then he also had Wolfenstein 3D. Because we hadn't been married. So he had it in like 93 or 94 when we were dating. So there must have been another version that I was playing then. And then we got Wolfenstein 3D a few years later. And then Duke Nukem, which I quoted in the intro. He was full of one-liners. A lot of them were inappropriate. Kids don't usually...
You obviously never played Leisure Suit Larry.
No, but I've heard so much about it. Oh, and Myst. Did you ever play Myst?
Yes.
It was like one of those point-and-click games, puzzle games.
Mist was on my list.
Yeah.
The Mist is on my list.
I thought it was a beautiful game. I was intrigued by it.
It is a beautiful game.
And now looking back at the graphics and stuff, is like, wow, we've come so far since then.
But I still think it's a pretty game.
Oh, yeah, it is. I still couldn't figure this stupid thing out. But
oh, I did it. But yeah. The thing is, I didn't have a computer. No one had a computer. We all had computer labs, except for my friend Rob. My roommate, Heather, who we've talked about on the show, her boyfriend, who's now her husband, his roommate, Rob, was like our only friend with a computer, like the best computer a kid could get, or even better. And he had all kinds of games. And he could do email, like in his room, you know, with dial-up. He would play the game and we would like watch him play the game. I know that sounds so weird. And I remember sitting and watching some of my friends do like LAN parties and playing Doom and Duke Nukem. It was a spectator sport to watch someone play a video game.
I enjoy doing that. I can remember watching people play Halo and stuff. And
yeah,
that's for our next series. Yes. But I completely understand. You know, I have a cousin. He streams his gameplay and people pay to watch him play.
Oh.
And he rakes it in.
My son watches these YouTube channels where it's nothing but people playing Minecraft. Yeah. I mean, it's weird.
So sorry. Go,
no, it's okay.
Go on. You were saying.
Well, the other thing I was going to say is that one of the games that Rob played that we watched was called Return to Zork. The only thing I remember about it was kind of like an adventure game where you'd go and talk to people and you'd solve puzzles or whatever. You'd go up to this one guy and he would say, "Want some rye?" Of course you do. I guess he's an old alcoholic. I don't know. And he is asking you if you'd like, I guess, rye whiskey, something mm-hmm. like that. Want some rye? Of course you do. And then we all like would say that.
It's funny.
Yeah. So it was all these kind of cute little quips. And I remember several games that Rob had that we all would watch, but I don't remember every single one of them. But then the other weird thing is that it's related because we're talking about the 90s is that I remember when that South Park episode came out. Did you ever watch South Park?
No, I played a lot of games because we didn't have cable.
No, this was online and you had to download it.
Okay.
It's very, very, very tasteless because it is South Park, but it's uh-huh. when Jesus and Santa actually have a fight, like a fight to the death. And then Brian Boitano comes in and breaks up the fight because he wants everyone to get along. It's horrible, but it's awesome. It's very short, but it was the 90s and you had to download it, you know?
I bet that took forever.
And it probably did take forever. And then I also remember it was a thing. So you forwarded emails and then you would also have like audio bites were like a funny, because like there was no YouTube, nothing like that. But you would share like funny audio clips and stuff with each other. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember doing that.
And it was just, and the websites just didn't look, like there was no, you know, I just thinking back on it, like all that stuff that we did, it was just not the same at all.
No.
People would not recognize. HTML wasn't even really the same. You just didn't have all these pretty things. It was just so basic. I mean, this is really not about video games. It was just
the 90s.
It was just about like what we were doing on computers in the 90s, basically. And then we also did chat rooms. Heather and I would always go into the thing and go to these chat rooms, just talk to random people. It was funny. So weird. We're sitting in like a math lab talking to people on the internet. I mean, that you've never
met. Can we do that now on Facebook?
We do, but at least the people on Facebook we've met before in some way.
Unless there are listeners in our Facebook group.
And I consider that they've met us, sort of.
Kind of.
The show.
Yeah.
It's not the same as going anonymously into a chat room. That's a totally different thing. At least they're familiar with us. So that, and then the other one was, we're going to talk about Oregon Trail. Did you ever actually play Oregon Trail?
No, but I've heard you talk about it so many times.
So, you know, it's about dying of dysentery.
Fun. Good times.
It's exactly what it sounds like. You'd start out at like the general store and you had a certain amount of money and you would pick all of your supplies that you were going to need to like get across, you know, across the Oregon Trail. And then as you go, things would happen to you. I don't remember all of it, but you'd be attacked or you could lose people or you could get married. There's all these things that you could do. I don't know that I ever actually finished it. It was just like the concept of Oregon Trail. So
that's kind of like Mist. You know, I started that and I didn't finish it. back then you couldn't really like jump on Google and look up, you know, okay, I'm stuck here. How do I get out of this? Mm-hmm. You were just stuck. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had classes to study for. Yeah. So I don't think I ever finished it. But I remember playing Quake. Did you ever play Quake?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And we played Diablo.
Oh, I remember Diablo.
But yeah. I was addicted to Tetris.
Oh, like, sure.
Mega big time addicted to Tetris. And David and I would have like these little Tetris wars against each other. He is really competitive in everything, even in pool. Like, we would play pool together in college too. Like, and we even took like classes to learn how to do trick shots and stuff, or not classes, but like videos that we were training videos and stuff, because we wanted to be good at it, right? But I could not stand him telling me how to play the game. We're just horrible playing together as a team or anything. At first it was cute, you know, when we were dating, it was fun to play Tetris together or whatever and Duke Nukem and Wolfenstein and things like that. But then when we started playing like I was talking about Rainbow Six and Halo and things, we could not play together. We get so ticked off. But anyway, yeah, Tetris, I could never beat him at Tetris. It's the way his mind is made up, because we're both creatives and I'm a designer, and like I could literally put blocks together in my sleep, matching colors and that shape doesn't look nice together. You know, let's redesign this page to look this way. I do that in my sleep. But for some reason, because he's in construction, he's a woodworker, Tetris for him is like breathing, and he could do it so quickly and see all the how to put it all together to delete entire blocks of stuff. It was those were the days, just trying to beat him on that. But I found a really cool article about Tetris on Den of Geek that I'll link to in the show notes. It talks about the genesis of the game and how it came to America. Duh, you can probably derive from the name and the music. It came from Russia. It had to be smuggled out. At least that's what I was reading in the article. It seemed that way. Didn't have a chance to finish it, but I'll post it in the show notes if anyone's interested in reading that. Oh my gosh, there were so many games. GoldenEye that I was talking about.
I was
about.
Just thinking GoldenEye.
007 GoldenEye.
And the other cool thing about GoldenEye is that you could do co-op play. I don't think they make enough co-op games. And that's one of the reasons I enjoyed starting to play MMOs, which we'll talk about in a later episode, is that it's basically co-op. You know, I really like that. Instead of having to fight against each other, that you go in and you are fighting the same enemy. And my brother and I would play that game, and it was really fun.
It was. And we were playing against this one guy who was retired military, something like that. And it was his game system. No, he was a neighbor of my friend. They came over and played, and that guy, oh my gosh, every time he'd beat someone, he'd be in their face. And then he played me, and I smoked him. And he kept wanting to play me over and over. He would not give in. How could he be losing to this church chick? It was fun to me. I'm sorry. I have to say there is a dark side to Jen, and I actually had fun smoking that guy.
You don't have to apologize for that. I like you better. I had three important games on the Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
One was GoldenEye. One was Zelda Ocarina of Time, which is probably in my top five games ever. Like, ever. And I'm not just talking, like, Zelda in general. I'm talking about that specific Zelda Ocarina of Time. It's amazing. It's awesome. It's so great. We have a version of it that I can play on the Wii, and I still play it sometimes. It's awesome. It's just such a well-made game. And talk about awesomeness when you, like, open one of those giant chests for the first time. It's like a religious experience. It's amazing. And then also, a lead up to one of my favorite games on the top five is Super Mario Kart. So the one on the 64 is actually probably one of the first games Jim and I played together when we were about 20 and we were seeing each other for a few months, and he hung out at my house and we played Mario Kart on Nintendo 64 in Rainbow Road. You never did this, Jen?
Playing games with my future husband? Yeah.
No, you not talking about that. I'm talking about Rainbow Road.
No, we established this.
I need to like introduce you to Rainbow Road because it's like such a thing. And then I'll talk later about my all-time favorite of that, but because that comes later. But yeah, so the Nintendo 64 had three of those just really amazing, impactful games for me as far as the console is concerned. But I know that was a big time for the PlayStation. And like some other people I know the PlayStation games were the big games from the 90s, and I just didn't have a PlayStation, so I didn't play any of those games. Oh, did you ever play Shivers?
No.
It was similar to Myst, but it was a horror game.
Mm-hmm.
You had to play it with the lights on because it was really, really scary.
I do remember these games making me sick. Did that ever happen to you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I'm so glad the graphics got better because...
Yeah, if you play them long enough, sure.
Well, it's also just the style of gameplay, or the motions are jerky. Ugh, I would get super sick. Thankfully, that doesn't happen to me anymore.
So in 98, my mom and dad finally bought like an actual computer, the PC you can think of now. It had like internet and, you know, decent graphics for the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it was probably like $1,500, yeah. Something ridiculous. Anyway, it was more like the PC that you think of now, obviously not as souped up, but it was like the modern jump that they made.
Mm-hmm.
I played several games on that because we got it in 98, and this sounds really silly, but the Compaq, and people who know computers will know this, but you were probably already on Macs by that time, but PCs, especially those Compaqs, they came with like 87 programs.
Yeah, I know. We had one. We had a Packard Bell.
Yeah, they were like preloaded, and mm-hmm. And luckily my friend Rob, the one that had the computer in the early 90s, he came and set it up for us and like cleared all that crap off of there. One of the games that it came with, or somehow we got, I don't know how we got it. It was a kid's game, and it was Where in Time is Carmen Sandiego.
Mm.
It was so fun, Jen.
Where in the world is Carmen Sandiego?
It was Where in Time is Carmen. Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So you travel in time, and then they had like the video capture of her helper. Oh gosh, I can't remember. That lady who would tell her like where she was going or whatever, or we need to find her. Anyway, I'll look it up. But it was really fun to play. It's kind of cartoony, and you had to do these little puzzles, and it was definitely meant for younger kids, but I totally played it, and it was really fun. I played it all the way through.
When you're in college, you eat ramen noodles, you sleep till noon if you don't have a class, you party all night, and you play kids' video games.
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
You do what you want because you can. Totally true. You're independent. Yeah. You have your own apartment or dorm room, and who cares?
Uh-huh.
Right?
I don't have as many games to talk about, but the ones that I did play, I'm really passionate about, mm-hmm. you know? But in 99, I was introduced to a game that would pretty much change my life. Do you remember like the last game you got into in the 90s?
It blends together with the 2000s for me. So it's hard for me to think of which game it could have been, but I want to say it was probably Wolfenstein or Duke Nukem.
Okay.
And then from then it was back to consoles. So, and you know, and by then it was Halo and Knights of the Old Republic and things like that. But
right. But that's for next time.
I think it was Diablo. Maybe it was Diablo. Because that was a later 90s game, I think.
It was. Yeah. That was. I got introduced to Civilization. Civilization 2.
And a bottle of wine.
The Test of Time. And I was introduced to it, and I know for a fact because of other stuff that was going on in my life at this time. In late 1999, someone gave me this game. I started it at 10 p.m. and I played until maybe 5 a.m. the very first time I ever played it. And I have just been in love with that series ever since. And the weird part about it is that I've always liked that game. And in the past 2 years, it's come out several times and we'll talk about it. In the past 2 years, I've gotten my husband into it. So, and I was thinking about it because I think Russell was asking, and I realized like I've been playing Civilization for 16 years. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, that's a long time. They got you hooked.
They did. And the weird part is that like Test of Time specifically, I mean, I remember I still compare. I mean, obviously the graphics are better in the newer ones, that kind of thing. But the gameplay of Test of Time was really good. I still have the CD. I started doing other games like a little bit later. In 2000s, which we'll talk about in the next next one, but Civilization was like the big thing that kind of happened at the end of 99 to cap off the 90s game stuff for me. So anyway.
Well, I pulled up a Reddit's 100 favorite 90s games, and I'll link to it in the show notes if anyone wants to look at it. But I thought it might be good to supplement our what we could remember with what they have on their list.
Jim wants me to tell everyone StarCraft was his huge game.
I was going to say StarCraft is on here and World of Warcraft.
And Warcraft.
Uh-huh.
Not World of Warcraft.
Warcraft, yes.
But Warcraft. And then also, prior to 2000, people did start playing EQ. Ultima Online was first. Those first MMOs started in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And Ultima Online was actually developed, and the GMs were all in Austin, which is very close. And I had a couple friends that were game masters on
Ultima. That's right. I remember you telling me that. Didn't you say you dated a guy that worked there?
I did.
I see another game on this list that I did play. Doom.
Doom was awesome.
You know, it's funny. I don't really like super bloody first-person shooters, but that seems to be what I was playing the whole time. And I don't know if it was because I just enjoyed first-person shooters and that's what was available, because now there's so many other options, you know.
I need to ask Jim one question real quick, because there's another game that I can't remember, but I know that he will.
Okay.
So just cut it right here for a second. Quake 3 Arena. I know that we talked about Quake, but...
And Quake 3 is on the list too, yeah.
That was like the specific one where you just like totally killed your friends and you could have the little LAN parties and hear them angrily curse because you killed them.
Yeah, but LAN parties, did that occur in the 90s or was that a 2000s thing?
Oh no, it had to be the 90s. Okay. Because that happened before... See, I know because I moved to New York in 99. So if it was before I moved... Or after I moved, then I know. And it was before. Well, after, obviously, too, but very fun. And I think, well, that's for the next one. It is kind of mixing. The 99
yeah, 2000s that's what are kind getting, of mixing. Starting to blend for me.
Yeah.
But what I was talking about, Doom, it came out in 1993. There's so many other ones. There's the Ultimate Doom, 1995. Doom 2, Hell on Earth, 94. Master Levels for Doom. Doom 3, Doom is coming out again in 2016, and they've been like teasing that for a long time. So
yeah,
but I remember it being all
didn't they do a Doom movie with like The Rock in it?
Oh my gosh, yes, that movie. Who the guy that we hate? He ruins everything.
What's his name?
It's right on the tip of my tongue.
We're like the idea.
Bowles?
Yeah,
no, it's a different guy.
Okay,
the director was. Andres Jig?
Don't try.
Bart Kawa. Anyway. Wow.
That's pretty funny.
It has 5.2 stars on IMDb.
Well, I don't mind a good just action movie if that's what it's supposed to be. You
Dwayne
know?
Johnson was in it.
The Rock. I love The Rock. What's wrong with The Rock?
Nothing. Rotten Tomatoes gave it 1 star.
Well, there you go.
Oh, Uwe Boll's. That's who I was thinking of. I think that's how you say his name. But
I think that's how you say it, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't. I don't
think but I think he purposely makes bad movies. Because the movie sounds okay.
Video game people really hate him because he ruins their loves.
Sounds like a good idea, and then what he does with it is just horrible.
Horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want to go back to the list? Because there's...
Oh, sure. I'm sorry. Fine. I got very excited about Quake.
Metal Gear Solid on the PlayStation 2. Did you ever play that game?
Mm-mm.
Final Fantasy 3.
Sith Jen, her husband, is a huge Final Fantasy person. Well, John is a huge video game person.
Yeah, he knows every game.
We should probably have him as a guest.
Yes.
He's one of those guys that can beat Super Mario Brothers in like 5 minutes. He's great.
In Sonic the Hedgehog, I didn't play in 91 or 92, whenever it came out, but we downloaded the game from Xbox Live, and Aaron loves it.
And what is it again?
Sonic the Hedgehog, the Sega Genesis game. Uh-huh. It's available on Xbox Live for download. Cool. So there's a couple of Sonic games, and Aaron plays them. He likes them a lot. The Secret of Monkey Island. It's a PC game.
Okay.
I've heard a lot about it. There used to be a game podcast that I really liked called Gaming Steve. And it went away. The guy was a game developer, and he did this awesome podcast where he would recommend old games and new games, you know, things that you probably would never try. I had learned about this game that I really, really love, that we'll talk about next time, that's super funny, A Spy in Harm's Way. Anyway, I think I heard about him talking about Monkey Island.
Cool.
Donkey Kong Country?
Yeah.
That's on because
I found this game. I found a top 10 list and it's on there.
Yeah. That's
okay. Well, hey.
I'm sure there are people shouting
at us. Like, what? But that's the thing is that, okay, this is the thing. And mm-hmm. I just realized this about the difference between the 80s and the 90s is that in the 80s, you didn't have that much choice. Everybody just played Pac-Man. When you get into the 90s, the video game world is your oyster. So you could just play whatever. You could only play what you had available or what you liked to play. Mm-hmm. Or in my case, what my brother had or my boyfriend or whoever at the time. So I just had to kind of go with it. And mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily get a choice of what I could and couldn't play, you know?
Yeah,
and I didn't really have that much of a choice until the late 90s. Mm-hmm. And early 2000s, which mm-hmm. that'll be even more interesting because there's even more games now. So,
and I have a lot of really funny stories to tell.
Oh, I do too.
Because my brother lived with us,
and in the 2000s we played our MMOs. So,
yeah, we had LAN parties and stuff, and there's some pretty hilarious stories about those. Do we want to keep talking about the list, or just like?
Oh, you go ahead if you want to.
Pokemon Red version, mm-hmm. Game Boy. Mm-hmm. StarCraft, number 4 is GoldenEye, Legend of Zelda, Link, you mentioned
Link
that
to the
one.
Past. Link to the See? Past. I told you it was amazing.
Super Mario Brothers is number mm-hmm. 6, Half-Life, number 7, Final Fantasy 7 is number 8, Mario Kart 64 is number 9,
yes!
Chrono Trigger is number 10, mm-hmm. Super Mario World is number 11,
yep.
Super Mario 64 is number 12, SimCity 2000. My brother played that game.
I remember one of my friends playing that game.
Half-Life Counter-Strike is number 14. Star Fox is number 15. Doom is number 16. Mm-hmm. Number 17 is Metal Gear Solid.
Yep.
Number 18 on this list is Final Fantasy 3. Mm-hmm. Number 19 on the list is Super Mario RPG Legend of the Seven Stars. I've never heard of it.
Me neither.
Sounds interesting, though. I didn't know they had an RPG with Mario in it. Super Metroid.
Metroid.
Yes.
Oh, Jim would be so mad at me for not mentioning that. Jim actually had at one point a Seamus shirt. Loves
I don't that find game. That hard to believe at all.
That was an awesome game. You played this character who's this big badass rolling around in this cool suit. And what do you find out at the end? It's a girl. Should we say spoilers?
No.
But it is a 20-year-old game.
Yeah, too bad.
That was huge to me. And was this when Tomb Raider came out?
Oh, Tomb Raider, 1996.
Yeah, you almost
forgot about
it. Where
did I play that? Because I didn't have a console. It must have been, I used to borrow my friend's consoles.
But you did play Tomb Raider.
So I did play Tomb Raider, and I loved it. In the game, you can go to Italy. And you can swim through, you know, the...
You do that in Assassin's Creed, but that is way later.
Yes, but isn't it weird? You feel like you've been there before whenever you actually see a television show mm-hmm. about the city that you've been to. I love that experience. When you can't afford to go somewhere, so you just want to, like, go somewhere in your mind.
It's like, and we should maybe cover...
physically interact with the environment.
We should maybe cover this at on our conclusion episode about games, mm-hmm. is that video game... documentary that I told you to watch.
Yes.
One of my favorite things about it is the very beginning when Will Wheaton is talking about the reason he likes games is the same reason he likes books and movies. It's a story. It's a place you can visit. But the cool part about video games is that it's that same experience, except for you have control over your actions.
It's like
you can interact.
Your own adventure.
Yes. Yeah. You can interact with the world. And mm-hmm. that's great. It's a very cool thing to do. And that's why in the 90s when these games got much more about the stories, and it wasn't just about saving the princess. There was so much more involved, like Myst you know, you could definitely have a game where you just kick each other's asses or you solve puzzles or you destroy mushrooms. But then you could also have games where there's like a real story. That's what's cool is that it got much more cinematic. Mm-hmm. The gameplay experience got much more cinematic, and that's so cool. It's so cool as an art form, you know?
Yeah. I do remember Will Wheaton saying that. We said that in one of our podcast episodes
a long time
like
ago.
Like 8 years ago. you were talking about Civilization and how you'd like to sit down with it with a bottle of wine. And I said, yeah, it's like a good book. And you're like, yep, yes, that's, you know, it's in a way to escape and just, you know, try to, some people don't, like David doesn't get why I need to play video games, because I was raised on video games, and sometimes that's the only way I can unwind. Some people smoke a cigarette, some people drink a beer, some people go punch a punching bag. I like to get my brain around a story or a puzzle, mm-hmm, or
just,
I like to be immersed.
World.
Yeah. I like to be immersed and disappear from this world for a while and go somewhere fanciful. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's a way for me to de-stress, especially like if I've had a particularly horrible day. Mm-hmm. I like to get a shoot 'em up game or where I could just be
Rambo.
Oh my
gosh. I totally forgot one of my favorite games, because we haven't really covered fighting games.
Oh my gosh. You're right.
I played Soul Calibur. We actually have a version of Soul Calibur, but it's a newer version. Yeah, fighting games are awesome. And the only thing that I hate about fighting games is that the stupid button mashers always freaking win. And so like you've stayed at home and you have practiced all of the moves and you know exactly, and then your friend comes over and just pushes buttons and totally kicks your butt. And it really, really sucks.
Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. I remember playing Mortal Kombat.
You know, it was so fun doing those special moves. Uh-huh. Where like the girl would like kick them and then
scissor
drop
kick them, yeah,
scissor kick, or like drop a seed and then a flower would grow from their corpse and stuff. Yeah. That was amazing. That was really cool. It's interesting how this episode had a totally different tone because of who we were when we were playing these games.
Yeah, you that's know? True.
I wasn't very grunge, because have you ever met me? I'm like way too happy for that. But I did wear blackberry lipstick.
Well, you do have those pictures, yeah.
I wore black
Mary Jane's and
I had
flannel shirt.
I'll definitely share some pictures, and I'll get permission from Stephanie, because most of the pictures of me involve Stephanie. So I'm going to talk Jim into maybe sharing some of his, because Jim was legit. He listened to Nirvana before it was cool. He played like
in a punk band. His punk band is who played all the music that you hear in our show, the intro, the outro, mm-hmm, music. That is from her husband's punk band from the 90s. It was called The Illuminati.
Illuminati, yeah. Yes.
And we have all the music from their band.
He, like, was totally legit with his Doc Martens and his, like, cut-off.
David had Docs, too.
And his cut-off shorts that weren't really shorts, I don't know. And then the flannel.
It was a little more Friends than...
See, that's the thing, is that I kind of transitioned to that, too.
Yeah.
Because I'm just, you know, I was a theater chick. I was way too happy.
Well, I studied art and design in college, and I definitely didn't fit into the art studio. They had shaved heads and rings in their ears and the hats and everything. And here I was like, one of these kids is doing his own thing. Come on.
You did not smoke enough weed, Jen.
No. Someone actually approached me in the metal studio. I specialized in painting, but I also was a metalsmith. And then I went on to study design. But I remember being approached in the metal studio like at midnight by this chick. And he goes, do you got a roach? I'm like, what?
But the weird thing is,
what are you talking about?
I know you wouldn't make that up, but who goes looking for a roach? You know what I mean?
Because she thought, if you're an art student, you got multa.
No, but my point is that if you actually knew what a roach is, you're not looking for that. I'll explain later.
You'll have to, because I've never experimented with any drugs other than alcohol.
In the 90s and Jen did, but I'm just telling you don't go looking around.
She asked for one. And
but I know Jen's telling the truth, because she doesn't know enough about the lingo to know that that doesn't make any sense. So that's why she has to be telling the truth. Everyone will know what I'm talking about. Not everyone.
I'll explain the later. 90s. Back to music. I really loved Alanis Morissette.
Oh, you know, they issued that Alanis Morissette CD when you went to college in the 90s, if you had boobs. It's true. That, and you know who I listen to? Do you ever hear of Poe?
Yes.
I freaking love Poe. And upright bass, that upright bass, and she would sing, and cool.
Veruca Salt.
What a great, that was a great band.
Yeah.
There was really good, like, girls' 90s garbage.
10,000 Maniacs.
Oh, 10,000 Maniacs. That was so cool.
I love Natalie Merchant. When the later 90s, I got into Natalie Merchant, and
you like Natalie Merchant.
Who's the one that would drive or sing the car song?
What?
Fast Car.
Oh, okay.
She's got a fast car.
Oh my God.
Tracy Chapman.
I hate her. Can't handle it.
I love Tracy Chapman.
Yeah, it's okay. I have nothing against her as a person. For some reason, there's like certain songs that I don't like at all. And that's just one of the songs. And also a song that I don't like is that song that goes, "And I miss you like the deserts miss the..." I hate that song. I hate it. And anything Taylor Swift sings.
What about the songs
'90s?
Like the club songs from the '90s. Some of them were pretty ridiculous.
Oh, wait. I got some good ones. The freaking Macarena.
Oh, the Macarena.
That was the thing.
Hate
and
that
then
song.
The very late '90s, they did Mambo Number 5.
Oh, yeah.
Because my name was in it at the very beginning. See, but then also I like listened to all this time when you were being a sweet little homemaker.
The heck? No, I wasn't.
I'm just making fun of you, Jen. Anyway, I was living it up in the college life and like going to parties and dancing and going to frat parties and all kinds of fun stuff. Theater parties. It was very fun.
I was one of the older girls in the dorm, and I remember all the girls on the floor being too loud. It was like 2 o'clock in the morning, and I opened my door and I glared them down to shut them up because I had an early class. Dang it.
Sorry. Jen, you are your party pooper.
I am.
That was me. I like never slept. Heather and I would just stay up late and we wouldn't be loud. We would just be talking.
I talked into the night too.
We would just like talk and talk. I love that. I miss that part of, you know, just having the stamina to be able to do that, like hang out and just like talk all night.
You've already mentioned this once before. We went to Texas State University. And when I was on campus, I lived in a dorm that was right next to the student center. They were building it at the time. So I woke up to jackhammers and construction equipment.
I thought you lived in like Laurel.
No, I lived in Arnold Hall, right next to Alkeck Library.
Oh, you lived in Arnold.
Up the hill, yes. And what they say about girls who went to Southwest Texas, they changed the name later to Texas State, but they always said the girls at Southwest Texas had the best legs because of all the hills.
There was some shortcuts to like, okay, if you left at exactly the right time, take an elevator at the very bottom of the education building and like take it up to the third floor, and then you only had to do one flight of stairs instead of doing that super steep, like 83 degree
climb up the hill. The art building was super old. They've rebuilt it since then, but it was right next to Old Main, and the tiles on the stairs were radioactive. You can use a Geiger meter and it would jump because of whatever glaze they had on the tiles. But also the elevator in that building, I remember it reminded me of a Star Trek episode. The ship's malfunctioning and everything's not operating correctly. The doors to the elevator opened before the elevator came completely to the floor, and I had to climb out of it. Like the floor was waist level, and I'm like, I'm getting the hell out of here before this thing drops and cuts me in half.
Every time I get an elevator, I think to myself, what am I going to talk with these people about for the next 12 hours while we're stuck?
I remember getting into an elevator on campus, and this must have been a social experiment. I don't know.
They did a lot.
They were all facing the wall instead of the door when I came
that
in.
That is something that the philosophy students did.
Oh, my God.
Theater
gosh.
People, we had our Weirdos. Own thing. It was never associated with that.
Since we're talking about college, David proposed when we were 20. He came to my dorm room after his graveyard shift at Kinko's.
Oh, Jen.
And he tossed pebbles at my window. And I was studying at my desk. And I got up and I looked out the window and he says, "Come outside, I have something life-changing to ask." And of course, my roommate hears.
My bless.
My roommate hears. She tells all the girls on the floor. Everyone goes to the windows on the bottom floor where he's waiting outside on the steps. And I go outside and he asked me to sit down and he, you know, asked me to marry him. And I said yes. And I didn't know this, but all the girls on my floor started applauding. And when he was proposing, I wrote in my diary that they were telling each other, "Shh, be quiet," and flipping each other off and stuff. And so, yeah, he proposed to me on the steps of Arnold Hall at Southwest Texas. And we're going to have our picture taken there this year on the steps as for our anniversary to commemorate it.
That is the sweetest and lamest story I've ever heard.
lame. Come on. That was a romance movie. That was a Nora Ephron moment, and you just peed all over it.
Jen, I did not at all. I'm just being silly. Of course. It's very sweet. I've just heard it like six times. So that's why.
I haven't told the people, though. I know you
I heard. Know, but they expect me to react that way. We gotta give the people what they want.
So video games.
Well, I have a personal story, too, that involves too much whiskey, but I won't go into it.
Okay.
And ever since then...
You hate it.
I can't... I mean, and it's been... I was 19, so that would have been 20 years ago. I still can't. 20 years ago, like this April, and I still can't.
Mm-mm.
With whiskey.
I can't either.
And that's why I mentioned the conversation that I had with my intern from last year, because... There is this sort of romantic notion of like this whole like 90s grunge, we don't care about anything era. And we got to kind of live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to think of it that way and think, oh, well, that's, I wish I would have been more aware, but I think everybody feels that way, you know, where you wish you're more aware in the moment. Mm-hmm. But I think I had a pretty good time.
Gen X wasn't given much credit in the 90s. You know, we were, you know, every generation of parents was able to do better for their children, and we were supposedly the generation that wasn't going to do better than their parents, and mm-hmm. we weren't going to amount to anything. We were slackers, we were lazy.
Yeah.
And our generation's the one that now is like, we all want to be self-employed. We all are entrepreneurs and just real innovative and into technology, and you know, the video game industry is full of Gen Xers. I mean, we kind of run it now. They totally didn't give us any credit.
Yeah.
Kind of miffed about that. No wonder we were singing angry songs back then.
Well, it was, you know, everything was kind of reactionary. I think we're good.
We're good. Do you want to do listener comments and then wrap up?
Yes.
Okay.
What is Bombad Radio? These guys.
Cass Anbar, Altair Ibn Lahad.
General Pongcrail.
Counselor Udina.
Jake Lloyd.
This is Handsome Jack.
Tom King, this is.
These girls.
This is Courtney Taylor, Jack in Mass Effect.
Alex Wilson-Regan, voice of the Inquisitor.
This is Poison Ivy.
Gina Eclipse.
This is Commander Shepard.
Discussions about comics.
For the Joker, plenty to talk about, but we don't know what goes on inside his head, and it's best that way.
Video games.
Essentially playing sort of a maniacal butler.
Movies.
You know who should really play this character is Doug Jones.
Books.
The tagline for this book is Star Wars meets Ocean's 11.
Then you got a little bit about what Bombad Radio is.
That's right. You're my kind of people, man.
Join us at bombadradio.com.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
Printing out emails. Here come the emails being printed out.
Hi, Jen and Ange. This is Scott. Just calling back in to answer the question that you posted on the latest Attack of the Clones episode. What would I do to rewrite to make a little more sense? The basic premise that Angela had was good. I would just tweak it a little bit. Heat of the moment thing is always good, but then she leaves. And leaves, doesn't go back to Naboo, doesn't go to Tatooine, goes back instead to, yep, that's right, Alderaan. Since we already have the tie-in that is where she was from Leia in Return of the Jedi. The Jedi finds out, or maybe more specifically, Obi-Wan finds out that she was pregnant and convinces her that she needs to separate the twins, because keeping them together, you know, if he found out about it, then other people are going to find out about it, since they already know that there's a Sith around. And he gets her to give up Luke, and that's when we have the scene of Obi-Wan riding that beast and taking it to Owen and Lars. And we do hear about the fact that, you know, we maybe not even hearing about what happened to Padme, because what happened to her is not important. Especially because then in episode 6, Leia tells us that when Leia was a little child, you know, mm-hmm. Padme died early. So she didn't really get to know her. So, so then we don't have the whole, that you'll get to later on, oh, she's lost the will to live. Yeah. So that's what I would do.
Okay.
Did he?
Interesting stuff.
Hey, Jen and Ange, haven't even finished listening to your episode.
He calls you Ange all the time.
Attack of the Clones. Had to call in and leave a hopefully short comment. Hopefully it won't knock me off again if I can stop rambling. Anyways, yes, totally agree with all of you guys. Anakin is a creeper. Angela, you hit it spot on. As soon as you mentioned it, I started laughing. Yes, Attack of the Clones could be a Criminal Minds episode, except Anakin doesn't bend Padme to kill anyone in his name. This second episode was just so off. But there were very good moments. For instance, like you guys mentioned, all the little nuances about, not being able to detect the Force, and there were some obvious, things going on there. I think Lucas just kind of got lost in what was going on and kind of lost his way. He did better as a writer and less as a director, really is where he needed to be. It is still a good episode because, of course, we do get to see Jango Fett and Boba Fett and the clones. Christopher Lee is just excellent doing what he does. Kind of going back to what you guys were mentioning in one of the Lord of the Rings episode. Just love the fact that you can just let Christopher Lee go, as Peter Jackson found out when he told Christopher Lee, hey, could you imagine or try to imagine what it would sound like for a person getting stabbed in the back with a knife? And, of course, Christopher Lee's response is just so epic. I don't have to imagine. Yikes. What are you going to do with that? So, yeah, just should have let them go. The romance was so creepy.
I think I listened to it in the wrong order.
Me too.
I just sit there and go, oh, that's not right at all.
No, you're right. It's not right.
So, yeah, I'll go back and finish it up. You guys are now talking about, you're beyond talking about Sifo Dyas and all of that and the Rule of Two. So I'll continue to listen to it. Just had to call in and let you guys know in a very quick.
Thank you, Scott. We always love getting emails from Scott. Voicemail messages. He always has lots to say, so he has to call in twice. But that's okay. We like playing all of his stuff.
Oh, I thought we were listening and then commenting.
Oh, well, it seemed to be working. I like the fact that we were listening and commenting and laughing over it. Oh. I'm still recording, so I think it would be cool to put that in there. What do you think about his idea about her going back to Alderaan?
I think that's okay. And I've thought myself out of the whole idea of, when Leia says that she remembers her mother, that's kind of a Force thing. Mm-hmm. I've reasoned myself out of that, but I think it would be better. I think it would be better if she was on Alderaan, because then if she was there for a little while, but she was just like, heartbroken and sad and maybe whatever Anakin did to her, like Force messed up her mind, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then she died before Leia like even knew her at all.
Yeah.
But where she was old enough to recognize her face,
mm-hmm.
but not old enough to really know what was going on. And then that would make more sense. Of course, it's, you know, it's one of those plot holes that always makes me laugh that it's like, yeah, so you hide Luke on
Tatooine.
Anakin's yeah. home world with his stepbrother. And yep, that's a great place to hide him. Great place. That's hidden. It's like hidden in place. And Obi-Wan's hidden there.
Yeah.
Another great hiding place.
Then we got one more message from Richard from Chicago. I don't think Richard has ever called in or written, so it was cool to get this
Hi, Richard.
Message from him.
Hello, ladies of Anomaly. This is Richard from the Chicago area. I've heard you talk a lot about Austin Comic-Con. I wanted to tell you about my experience at a Creation convention here in Chicago. Creation does specific conventions, Star Trek, Supernatural, Vampire Diaries, etc. What's unique about their conventions is that they only sell enough seats that the auditorium they're in holds. The hotel I was at had about 1,100 seats, so that's the maximum tickets they would sell. So unlike Austin Comic-Con or Chicago Comic-Con, where you might be waiting hours to get into a panel that you may not get into at all, at the convention earlier this year, 2,500 people didn't get into the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. panel. It kind of defeats the whole point of going to the convention.
No,
when you can't
he's talking a lot more about
and panels
San
are
Diego.
Mm-hmm. Favorite part of conventions. So I figured I'd mention you check out the
Creation
website.
Yeah.
They are coming to Dallas next year, which I know is a hike for you. But it might be interesting to see, with it being the 50-year anniversary of Trek,
Woo-hoo.
To check out a
no, that sounds awesome.
Convention.
Yeah. Thank
oh, you for
I'm your so
time,
glad.
Ladies, and I love the podcast.
Well, I think it's the things you hear about people waiting, a lot of that is San Diego Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a podcast with Rico, actually, where we all talked about our experiences at con. It was really interesting and eye-opening to hear Kenny's experiences
yeah.
at San Diego. And then also in the next couple of weeks, we hope to two of our friends that we've talked about on the podcast before went to San Diego Comic-Con this year, and we are going to interview them. So we have kind of, first of all, we can't afford to go to San Diego, or I can't anyway.
No.
But Austin, I have never not uh-uh. been able to get into a panel.
Austin's a smaller con and it's easy to get into stuff. So
yeah,
but just as fun, I would love to go to that Creation Con.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Well, and I appreciate you
pointing it out to us. Yeah,
you pointing it out to us. We always want to hear new things. So
yeah, don't be a stranger. Thanks for calling us.
Thank you.
We received two messages from our Facebook group members. One was from Reginald, and the other one was from Oren. And they had some really good ideas on how to improve upon some of the failings of the Attack of the Clones plot. Angela and I both really enjoyed reading those and wanted to read them in this episode, but it got kind of long, this episode of ours. But we will be doing a mailbag episode in the not-so-distant future. We would like to read both of these on that episode. So thank you for taking the time to do that. We really appreciate it.
If you want to call us and give us your thoughts on the Attack of the Clones episodes that Scott was commenting on, or any convention episodes like what Richard was commenting on, you could do that by calling our voicemail line at 432-363-4742. You can also just go to anomalypodcast.com, click on contact, and you'll find the numbers there, and you'll also find our contact fields where you can just type in a message.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can email us at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z @gmail.com.
Our Facebook page, which we're still getting more likes, so I'm very excited about that, even though I forgot Wonder Woman Wednesday. Oops. So we have our Facebook page that has all of our new posts. We have a very active blog nowadays. We have a whole staff that is contributing at least 4 times a week. And there's all kinds of different views on there and all kinds of different types of content. So if you like nerdy things, that's a good place to go. And then a completely different type of thing, if you'd like, is the Anomaly group, which functions kind of like a forum, you used to. For podcasts like this, the group is a really great place to go. And we get so much cool stuff from there. I look at it all the time, the stuff that people post. Everything from quizzes to new movie information, all kinds of cool
comments on our podcast, lots of interactions with
and of course we do put our podcast there, and we have some heated debates sometimes, very interesting
sometimes. Check that out. You can also follow us on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y Podcast. You can visit our website at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Subscribe to the podcast website. And every time that we post a blog or update our show notes or anything like that with a new episode, you'll get an email in your inbox that afternoon. Not as we do it, but in the afternoons. So do that. Subscribe to our newsletter. Our contest is over. And we are going to announce the winner in a second. But thank you to everyone who subscribed to our newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter, and we'll start releasing that in August. So it will give you all the latest information on Anomaly, what's coming up in our schedule, any conventions we're going to, events that we're going to do, any blog posts for the past month, and podcast episodes for the past month. Past month that you may have missed will be in the newsletter. And so we've got a lot of things up our sleeves for Anomaly that we're working on that we'll be unveiling, I guess, through.
What is our next episode going to be about?
Wow.
I know.
I can't remember. Refresh my memory.
You will be doing an interview with the
501st. Oh, yes. Yes. We have an interview planned with a representative from the 501st. She's going to show us around her studio. So hopefully we'll get some good pictures and video and some really interesting information about the 501st and how to join and what it's like to do these costume club things.
And it's part of our ramp up to Comic-Con, which will be in late October. So that'll be very exciting.
Yeah, that's what's coming up on Anomaly. Thank you very much for listening. And the winner is of our newsletter drawing, drawn by an impartial person who has not yet drawn the name yet, and we will dump it in. Megan Crooks.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much for playing our little game. And we're going to be emailing you and getting your address so that we can drop that $50 Visa gift card in the mail to you.
Cool.
So congratulations. Go spend it on something nerdy. Remember to visit the show notes. Check out all the cool videos on the video games we were talking about and links that we discussed. And I'm Jen.
And I'm Angela. And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, where female and fandom converge.
Support Anomaly through feedback and donations by visiting anomalypodcast.com.
That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y.
Podcast.com.
Thank you for listening to Anomaly. If you like what you heard, please tell your friends, tweet or share a link, and spread the anomalous word. Stay up to date on all that's Anomaly by visiting anomalypodcast.com. You can help us out by rating or reviewing our show through iTunes, Zune, or Stitcher Smart Radio. Those stars help a lot. The original Anomaly theme song and outro are by Angela's husband, Jim, and his old punk band, the Illuminati.
Gamma Quadrant Golf Clap.